Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. For nearly three decades, the Waldorf Hotel has sat vacant, sandwiched between Astoria City Hall and the City Library downtown. Though it shares a name with an opulent counterpart in New York City, that is all these two Waldorfs have in common. Long derelict, the 1920s era Astoria Waldorf, also known as the Merwin, has, to put it mildly, seen better days. It was even destined for the wrecking ball until a nonprofit Portland development company purchased the building and announced plans to turn it into 40 much-needed workforce housing units, provided the building passed necessary inspections. Just this past week, the development company stated that the renovation plans were a go. With me in the studio to discuss the plans is Julie Garver, the Housing Development Director of Portland's Innovative Housing Incorporated, the Waldorf's new owner. Also in the studio are Brett Estes, Astoria's City Manager and former Community Development Director, and John Goodenberger, an Astoria native and historic preservation consultant for the City of Astoria. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Julie, Brett, and John.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think I'm going to start, John, by asking you what it means to know that the Waldorf is actually going to get restored.
It's a relief. I mean, it's been vacant for most of my life, and to see it finally have some life coming into it, that's really wonderful. It's a simple building, and it's easy to overlook in that way or dismiss in that way, but it's a valuable building to our downtown, so it's wonderful that this is about to happen.
Great. And Brett, I'll ask you the same question since you've been here 10 years and have never known it. Well, none of us has when it looked like it used to when it was originally built.
Right. I mean, it's definitely, I look at it as a building that has been in the greatest need of some work along the Duane Street corridor. We've seen so much redevelopment over in that area and improvement along Duane Street. And I see the Merwin as a kind of a key catalyst for making that much more an active street moving into the future.
Julie, tell us about the plans. What is Innovative Housing's timeline for getting started on the plan, and how long do you expect the renovation to take?
Well, I kind of joke with folks when they ask me that question and say that we're on the forever plan, because sometimes it takes a while to redevelop historic buildings and finance affordable workforce housing. And it takes a lot of planning. You know, there are still questions to answer and community feedback to receive. So the best case scenario is that we'd start construction in about a year. And then if it takes longer to get funding, we would start construction in about 2 years. And the project itself would take about 12 months to complete. And so then we could have residents moving in.
And what kind of budget will you be working off?
The budget for the project is approximately $10 million. And so that's an expensive project for 40 units of housing. But we're doing more than just building apartments here. We're restoring a historic building and a piece of the community. And that counts for something, and it's worth paying for. And so we're going to be raising money for that in a variety of ways, including low-income housing tax credits and historic tax credits and a mortgage for the building, and hopefully a little help from the community, too.
Say more about that.
Well, I think it's important for folks to feel invested in the project. I would love to take credit for saving the Merwin, but we didn't do it. The community did it. A few years ago when the Merwin was facing demolition, the community rose up and said, hey, we value this building. We want this building saved. We want to say no to demolition. And that impressed us. That's one of the things that made us want to come here, is that kind of community spirit. And so we want the community to be involved from everything. If it's if it's donating $10 to have the canopy restored, or if it's contributing, making art to the building, or if it's playing music at the grand opening, or those kind of contributions to the building by the community makes it belong to all of us.
John, why does the Merwin deserve to be restored?
There's any number of reasons why you might save a building. Maybe because, it's involved with an important person or an important event, or it's, you know, a particular style or the artistry of the building. I like the building. I think it's a nice-looking building. But in the end, the reason I would say to save it is it would be a waste not to. It's there. It's a difficult project, but it's there, and we're not going to get it back. And when we are struggling for housing and there's at least, let's just say at worst, half a building there, why get rid of it? And when I think about housing in downtown Astoria, it was the 1940s the last time we constructed housing in downtown Astoria.
Really?
So 70 years have passed. So that to me says that's a real, there's something difficult about this.
Wow.
And so if we have a building and we can revitalize it, then let's use it. Let's not waste it. So that would be the reason, the kind of the more practical thing rather than perhaps the more romantic of, I like the building. But so.
So does it have some special architectural features that you really appreciate?
I mean, when you look at the front, you see the plaster relief on it, the shields that give a little bit of a flare to it. And when we get when Julie gets the canopy back, this wonderful arched canopy, that's really going to have this kind of this classy look.
Over the front of the building?
On the front, a glass canopy that's arched, wow, that comes and sticks out and protects people as they, you know, walk into the building,
in
keeps them out
rainy,
of the
rainy climate.
In our rainy climate. So, I mean, there's those kinds of things. And it has a brick face on it, a nice brick face on it. We just don't have a lot of brick faces. And then down on the bulkhead, it has, I'm going to say maybe a granite or something. I can't quite remember what the stone is down there. But nevertheless, just small, classy details on it.
And Brett, you mentioned to me before we started the program that the city was even uncertain about whether to renovate the library next door, as it is now going to be doing, because of the condition of the Merwin. Is that true?
That's true. I mean, it's... If we go back not only 5 years, when we started having discussions about needs for the future of the library, some of the things that we were taking a look at were, you know, if we were to expand in place, how would we do that? But also there was discussion from the community about how do we address a code enforcement issue being the Merwin Hotel right next door. And there was discussion, that came out of that process of, perhaps the Merwin building is gone. We look at addressing library needs through some sort of new structure over in that space. And so, the dialogue about demolition, a lot of it was coming out of how do we address the future of the library? There was also dialogue about if we are going to remodel the existing library in place, the concern of putting millions of dollars into restoring and renovating an existing library building when we have a derelict property next door that's spalling materials off of the side. A lot of people may not know that that we've had clogged roof drains on the library because of that. And if we're going to be putting money into that into the future and we aren't taking care of the Merwin issue, there's it was kind of seen as an incomplete mission doing it singularly.
Julie, it is a very dilapidated building. I don't need to tell you. So how does a company make it work financially when you renovate and then you're not even going to be charging market rate for most of the units?
Well, I think that that's a two-part answer. And one of the reasons why the community has been waiting so long for us to make up our minds about the building is that we've been doing a lot of due diligence. So we've had our contractor through, our structural engineer, our environmental consultant, a geotechnical engineer. We've been drilling holes in the basement floor and testing soil and figuring out what the building is sitting on. So we've been doing a lot of work to figure out just how far the damage goes and what our scope of work will be. So we've got our arms around that, and we do feel like it's manageable. Then, you know, with the exception of a few glaring, obvious problems, the building's in fairly good shape for being vacant for 30 years. There's a lot of it that's been preserved well. So that's good news. And then on the financial side of things, a project like this, the reason so many folks have looked at it and it hasn't been feasible over the years is because technically we're going to put more money into this building than it will appraise for. And that's a really difficult thing for a private market developer to undertake, because you just need a lot of free money to do that. And so we're utilizing a combination of federal programs, low-income housing tax credits, and historic tax credits. And when you put those two things together, it's a really powerful combination. And it can really be great for communities because it addresses both issues.
And you will remain the landlord, the owner, once the renovation is complete as well?
Innovative Housing has a long-term commitment to its apartments. In our almost 35 years of existence, we've never sold a multifamily project that we've developed. So we're a long-term owner and manager, and so we build them to last, and we want to be a long-term contributor to communities.
So talk about what workforce housing means. That's kind of a euphemism.
It's an interesting term, and I think in the industry, in our affordable housing industry, it really means we're trying to provide housing for people that are working and that their incomes don't really support market rate rents, them to pay, you know, $1,000 for an apartment, which is some of the going rate in Astoria right now, depending on the size. And so if you're making $20,000 a year, $25,000 a year, you have money to spend. You're spending on food and goods and services, but it's hard to pay $1,000 a month to live. And so that's the market that we're targeting. Whether you call it millennials or whether you call it downtown workers, we're focusing on the folks that want to live where they work. And so they're walking two blocks to Finware, or they're walking down to Fort George to work, or they're walking to a lot of small businesses that have service workers that are in that income range.
And how will the rents be set? I understand that most of them will be below market value, but they'll be based on percentage of the median income in Clatsop County?
They are based on percentage of median income. Most of the units will be at 60% of median income. And so that's, you know, $20,000 to $25,000 a year that people will be making. And then there'll be some at 50%, so that's a little bit less. And then we're going to have four units that are quote-unquote at market rate, which are probably going to be studios and one bedrooms that'll range from $725 to $825. But we like to include the market rate units because it gives income diversity to the building, and it really helps support the whole program. And so that's something that we value and we feel like the community values as well.
So in today's rates, what would that look like as far as specific dollars go?
So the restricted rents, the income restricted rents that we just talked about, will range between $425 and $625. And then the market rate rents will range $725 to $825. And that's going to include utilities.
Wow. You'll have a long line, I would think. So how will you decide who gets to go in?
It's going to be first come, first served. And obviously, the Astoria community has been anticipating this project for a while and is going to be watching it. And so we're not going to have to do a lot of marketing, I think. But the Downtown Association is going to help us make sure we get the word out to employers, because downtown employers, they're going to be our first go-to for for letting them know when apartments are available and making sure that their employees come in and get signed up on a waiting list.
And these would be predominantly employees in the service industry?
I think that it's really any employees that are making a certain income range that we talked about. So, and that might be part-time. Maybe those folks are working part-time, and that's why they have a lower income.
Brett, what does it mean for the city to have 40 workforce housing units coming online in a couple years or so?
Right. You know, as you know, has been discussed over the past year or two, I mean, even going back further, but there's been a lot more discussion over the past couple of years at the city council level. The issue of affordable housing is of importance. And the city council talks about affordable housing not necessarily within a certain range, but it's housing that people at all stratas can afford. And I think that that this project will provide an opportunity for, as Julie said, people who work downtown, who want to have that urban lifestyle, to be able to live, work, socialize all within a certain area. The county, in partnership with all the cities in Clatsop County, are going to be embarking on a housing study this year. And we're going to be looking at what are the needs that are out there for housing at all stratas. And I look at this project as a project that's moving forward that we can look at as a part of the housing strategy to say, we have some units that are coming online and that are fitting a specific set of criteria within a certain wage rate, but also within a certain livability factor. I mean, I'll note that, and you know, I live within close distance to downtown. I purposefully chose to live close to downtown because I wanted the ability to walk to work. I walked to work today. I walked over to this interview. And that was a choice that I was able to have. But I think that as rents have increased, it's becoming more and more difficult for everyone to be able to do that. And it allows for businesses that are downtown who are really looking for employees. We hear that all the time, to be able to have a place to live. And as you mentioned, the millennials, many times that could be those folks that may not have a car to be able to live that urban lifestyle.
If you're just joining me, you're listening to a pre-recorded discussion about plans to renovate the long vacant and decrepit Waldorf Hotel next door to City Hall in downtown Astoria. I'm speaking with Julie Garver of Innovative Housing Incorporated, the nonprofit development company which now owns the Waldorf and will turn it into 40 workplace apartments. I'm also speaking with Astoria City Manager Brett Estes and Astoria Historic Preservation Consultant John Goodenberger. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. John, you were just in the building a few days ago on a tour.
Sure.
Describe it for those of us who are not in that building and would like to know what it's like.
Well, there's always people. I mean, they kind of summarize by saying it looks like it's out of a horror film because it's kind of scary in there. It's dark and, you know, paint is peeling.
Perfect hole in the floor.
There's holes in the floor and all. And then, you know, because there's pigeons flying through, it's a bit messy.
How did they get in?
Oh, the broken windows above the library. They come in through that area. And so, you know, this kind of stinky and all of that. But the key element here is, you go in, you think, wow, this is a pretty solid building. Yes, there is an issue. There is an issue on the west side. I don't want to diminish that. But it's in really pretty good condition. And the other part of it is, it's all there. I mean, the wood trim is still there. The doors are still there. The windows are still there. All the wood floors are still there, where there's not a hole. The wood floors are still there. So you have a lot to work with. You don't have to guess the character of the building. It's there. So it's dark, it's dank, it's smelly, and it's in great condition. How about that?
Oh, that's great. Julie, Is your company at all concerned about what you'll uncover as you start really getting into the renovation?
I think one of the things about historic buildings is that there's always a new surprise. Whether it's in the pre-development period or whether it's in the construction period, there's always something new to find out. And so we work with a team of people that are accustomed to that. And so they build those uncertainties into our budget, and they're used to coming right over when those things are uncovered and we need to find solutions to problems. We've already brainstormed one temporary solution. John saw it this weekend in the tour. When the contractor came through, we found a big post beam connection that's over right next to the library, and it was at the failure point. It had the beam connection, the beam, which is what, John, 12 inches by 24 inches?
Oh, wow. At least, yeah.
It's a huge timber. Yeah. It had the end of it had literally rotted out and was not being supported by its metal bracket anymore. And the contractor said, I'd like everyone to step out of the building now.
Uh-oh.
And so we did, and they came back down the next week and did a massive shoring project. So there's a big structure inside the building now that's holding up that 12-inch by 24-inch beam. And that's an example of what you do when you find the surprise. You get in there and you solve it in the most cost-efficient way possible. You don't rip everything out to solve it. You take care of the one point that has the issue.
So I'm still trying to get at what's in it for your company to do work like this? Because I don't think you're going to get rich doing it.
Well, we are a nonprofit, so that's a given. But there is a special sort of reward that comes with historic preservation. I mean, there's a special kind of reward for providing affordable housing for people, maybe for people that don't have the choice of buying a house downtown. They want to live in the downtown, they want to work in the downtown, but they just can't, they don't have the income to have a place. So there's a feeling of pride and fulfillment in doing that. But bringing those historic buildings back to life, walking through the lobby and seeing those 15.5-foot ceilings and seeing the slight Art Nouveau elegant detailing of the stairwell railing. I have a story that I tell about a building that we renovated in Portland called the Erickson Saloon. And it's a building that is a little bit older than this one, owned by August Erickson, who also owned a saloon in Astoria, the Louvre.
Mm-hmm. So interesting.
It was called the Louvre, and it's where McDonald's is now.
Oh.
So, but the bar still exists. John, where's the bar?
The bar, there is a bar in the Clatsop County Historical Society's Heritage Museum.
Oh, upstairs?
Upstairs.
That's and beautiful.
It's been rumored to have come from there anyway, but we're not quite sure.
Urban legend.
Yeah.
Urban legend. So August Erickson has a unique connection to Astoria, a good Finn. And we renovated that building a couple of years ago, and it has an atrium space. It's a three-story, 30-foot by 40-foot atrium, and we put a skylight over the top, and we put these art features in there that interpret the history of the place. And folks with limited incomes moved in, and I was there doing a building walk one day, and there was a resident. She was standing outside her door. She was a retiree, so we had a different focus for residents there. The potential population, but a retiree. And she was just standing, looking up at the courtyard. And she didn't see me. I was there to look at other stuff, boring punch list things. And I just observed her for a minute. And then she noticed me and she's like, oh, well, you must think I'm a little crazy, but I'm just standing here enjoying this, looking up and enjoying it. And I said, well, I don't think that's crazy at all. I love old buildings. And she's like, this is the nicest place I've ever lived. You know, a historic building is totally different than a new building. I never thought I'd get to live in a place like this. That's such a privilege. Thank you.
Wow.
And so that's one of the reasons that we do it, is to provide that sort of opportunity for everyone.
How closely? Oh, Brett, go ahead.
Joan, I'd like to just, you know, kind of add on about from the city's perspective on this whole thing. The city of Astoria, because of our topography and because of our culture as well, we don't have lots of greenfield vacant land to build new buildings. I mean, we're constrained by water on three sides and a forest on the other. So if we are going to change, you know, add additional housing, you know, we inherently many times look at these existing buildings and even with new businesses. And I look at what we've seen in the downtown over the past few years with Fort George, and when it was a vacant car dealership and some derelict buildings over there, Bowie with the old fish processing plant, even what was upper floors of residential housing at the Hotel Astor. If you remember going back 6 years ago, the bottom floor of the Hotel Astor was all boarded up. And so for us to be able to add additional, in this case, housing, we focus and try to look at ways to reuse these buildings. And I think it's also part of our culture, but it's also part of how we as a community change. And that's kind of built into our ethic at the city of Astoria.
We do. But John, I know you gave a presentation not too long ago about a period in Astoria's history. I don't know if it was the 70s, where many buildings were torn down.
Oh, yeah. The derelict building program of the 60s, where we lost 164 buildings in a short period of time, because it was just easier to kind of clear the lot than to deal with the building itself. And so, yes, this is Astoria, with the help of locals and new folks, we have been working and working and working to develop the downtown, redevelop, revitalize the downtown and the neighborhoods for decades. And so it's paying off. The patience and tenacity is paying off from the locals. And again, the new and the fresh blood that we have to kind of take over, because we can't do it all ourselves. We need some help there.
Julie, so. Go ahead.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about, and you reminded me of this, John, as you were talking about the locals, is that although we have a general contractor selected for the project that has a lot of experience working on these types of historic buildings, then one of the nice things about this general contractor, who is Silco Commercial Construction, is that they are really geared toward working with smaller subcontractors, especially local subcontractors. Silco's done quite a bit of work in Astoria, building new apartments, actually. But so they're familiar with, and they already have folks in mind that can, you know, that they want to reach out to get bids from. And so it's really satisfying for us to be able to say, a lot of that $10 million project cost is coming into the Astoria community. You know, whether it's through the subcontractors or the fees or the soft costs or, but that's, Astoria's going to see a lot of that money.
We are just about out of time. Any closing comments, Brett or John?
No, I'm just going to say that it's, our city councilors, I've heard from several of our city councilors about the project and how excited they are moving forward. And I share their excitement in seeing something happen. And I really think it's going to help make this whole block of Duane Street and our downtown and our community as a whole a much better place, not only providing needed housing, but also aesthetically.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Julie Garver, Brett Estes, and John Goodenberger, for coming into the studio and speaking about plans to renovate the Waldorf Hotel. Thank you, Julie, Brett, and John.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Julie Garver is the Housing Development Director for the nonprofit company Innovative Housing of Portland, which, after performing due diligence inspections, announced last week that it is proceeding with plans to renovate the long vacant and dilapidated Waldorf Hotel in downtown Astoria into 40 affordable workforce apartments. Brett Estes is the Astoria City Manager, and John Goodenberger is an historic preservation advocate and consultant for the City of Astoria. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Perspectives was engineered today by Joanne Rideout. The show can be heard Fridays on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening. Thank you.